Hello and welcome. In this special edition episode of the Endocrine Outlook, you will hear from Professor Hito Hirschbank. Hirschbank recently presented results of the DAPA-CKD trial at the University Society of Cardiology Congress 2020. This trial examined the effects of dapagliflozin, also known as Farxiga, in patients with chronic kidney disease with and without type 2 diabetes. Results of the trial indicated the SGLT2 inhibitor was associated with a reduction in the study's primary endpoint, which was a composite of preventing worsening kidney function or death from kidney disease or cardiovascular disease in the patient population. For more on the results of this trial and how its results inform the use of dapagliflozin in patients with and without type 2 diabetes, Endocrinology Network reached out to Hirschbank to take part in the special edition episode of the Endocrine Outlook. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Professor Hirschbank.
My name is Hito Hirschbank. I'm a clinical trialist at the University of Groningen in the city Groningen, which is in the northern part of the Netherlands.
Thank you for that. And now, I guess the big question right off the bat will be, what were the final results of DAPA-CKD and how does this inform us on the use of dapagliflozin in patients?
The DAPA-CKD trial tested the effect of dapagliflozin on kidney failure and cardiovascular outcomes in patients with chronic kidney disease with and without type 2 diabetes. The trial showed that dapagliflozin reduced the risk of the primary outcome, which was a composite outcome of halving of kidney function, end-stage kidney disease, renal or cardiovascular death, by 39%, which was highly statistically significant. In other words, in the placebo group, there were 312 patients that experienced the primary outcome, and this was reduced to 197 in the dapagliflozin arm. These numbers translate into a number needed to treat of 16, which means that you have to treat 16 DAPA-CKD participants for the duration of the trial to prevent one major outcome, which is very low.
Yeah, those are really impressive results. I just have to ask you, one of the very few criticisms of DAPA-HF was sort of what some people thought was a little bit selective inclusion criteria for patients in regard to renal function and EGFR. Does this address all the concerns that endocrinologists might have had regarding the renal effects of dapagliflozin in patients?
We enrolled participants with a very broad EGFR range from 25 mL per minute to 75 mL per minute. In other words, for patients with chronic kidney disease stage 2 to 4. All our participants had an albumin creatinine ratio more than 200 mg per gram, or in European Union units, 22.7 mg per millimole or above. This is a wide range of patients. Admittedly, we didn't enroll patients with microalbuminuria or normal albuminuria. However, the DECLARE study among participants with type 2 diabetes at cardiovascular risk already demonstrated that dapagliflozin slows the progression of kidney disease and reduces the risk of dialysis in participants with low levels of albuminuria and with higher levels of EGFR. So the combined DECLARE DAPA-CKD program illustrate that dapagliflozin is effective in reducing renal risk across the spectrum of kidney functions and across the spectrum of albuminuria levels. So when we see these trials in conjunction, I believe that it illustrates the extreme powerful kidney protective effects of dapagliflozin.
Okay, and now just lastly, what was the safety profile like that we saw in DAPA-CKD? I know with SGLT2s, there's always just sort of this worry about severe DKA in patients. Do you see anything like that in DAPA-CKD?
Of course, a very important question. We're not only looking at efficacy, but we should also always consider safety. The proportion of patients with an adverse event that led to drug discontinuation or a serious adverse event was similar between the dapagliflozin and placebo group. We also had a number of adverse events of special interest, among which diabetic ketoacidosis, major hypoglycemia, fractures, and amputation. The number of patients with diabetic ketoacidosis was 2 in the placebo arm and 0 in the dapagliflozin arm. So none of the patients had diabetic ketoacidosis. Major hypoglycemic events occurred in 28 patients in the placebo arm and 14 in the dapagliflozin arm. So half of the patients on dapagliflozin. Among the non-diabetics, there was no patient with a major hypoglycemic event. Amputations were similar between the dapagliflozin and placebo arm, which is different than the profile you saw in the CANVAS trial, where there was a higher risk of amputations with canagliflozin, which, by the way, was not confirmed in the CREDENCE trial with canagliflozin. And then the other adverse events were numerically similar between adverse events of interest were numerically similar between the dapagliflozin and placebo arm. So the safety data overall is consistent with the well-established safety profile of dapagliflozin, even in these high-risk CKD patients.
Okay, and then just one more particular question about the dapagliflozin CKD results. Was there anything that stood out to you when you were looking at the results in patients with diabetes versus those without, that might give you a little bit more information or insight into the mechanism of these SGLT2 inhibitors?
Yes. Well, first of all, what stood out was, of course, the early termination for overwhelming efficacy and the very large effect on the primary outcome. Of course, the most interesting question scientifically also to us as investigators was whether the effects were consistent in patients with and without type 2 diabetes. The primary outcome was reduced by 36%, hazard ratio 0.64, in patients with type 2 diabetes. Now, in patients without diabetes, the primary outcome was reduced by 50%, a hazard ratio of 0.50, which was statistically significant, as was the hazard ratio for the patient with type 2 diabetes. So just like DAPA-HF, dapagliflozin had consistent effects on the primary outcome in patients with and without type 2 diabetes. And what does this say about the mechanism of action? There was already a lot of thought that these drugs reduce major kidney outcomes independent of their glycemic effects. And I think this is now confirmed in the DAPA-CKD trial. In my view, dapagliflozin reduces the pressure in the glomeruli, thereby reduces the pressure on the delicate filter in the kidneys, and thereby preserve long-term kidney function. The mechanisms are most likely related to the increase in sodium excretion and natural releases that we observe, but there are more recently also other mechanistic effects that may contribute to the protective effects, including beneficial effects on endothelial function, including anti-inflammatory effects. Some people believe that there is a paradigm change in transcriptional factors, including, and it now becomes very molecular, SIRT1, AMPK1, that translate into increases in EPO levels, which may in the long term also protect the kidney. So there is probably a range of effects that jointly explain these large risk reductions on clinical outcomes. Now, the third thing that stood out in the trial was the tremendous risk reduction for all-cause mortality. Dapagliflozin reduced the risk of all-cause mortality by 31%. So in other words, 146 patients died in the placebo arm and 101 in the dapagliflozin arm. This 31% reduction in all-cause mortality was statistically significant.
All right, thank you for that. And now it's sort of a kind of obvious answer after hearing the results of the trial, but what do the results of this trial do to the sort of the understanding of the appropriate patient population for dapagliflozin? This just has to sort of be a gigantic boom in the number of people who make the list on who are appropriate for dapagliflozin now, correct?
I would say yes. First of all, we have to remember dapagliflozin was developed as an oral glucose lowering drug and has important effects on glucose lowering. So any patient with type 2 diabetes should be recommended an SGLT2 inhibitor, in particular because these drugs also improve clinical outcomes, including heart failure, which is the most common cardiovascular complication nowadays of type 2 diabetes, and a slow progression of kidney function decline, both in early and late stages of disease. Now, we've also shown that these drugs are effective in lowering the risk of kidney failure, heart failure among people without diabetes, with kidney disease or with heart failure with reduced ejection fraction. So dapagliflozin is moving out of the diabetes area into the non-diabetic cardiology nephrology arena and also demonstrates beneficial effects in those patients.
All right, and just one last question for you. I know one of the biggest sort of gripes with clinicians is that oftentimes after we see really great clinical trial data, it still takes years and years and years for sort of the prescribing practices to catch up to what it needs to be.
Yeah.
Is there, since it's, like you said, we're sort of seeing a paradigm shift of this going from endocrinologists and diabetes specialists to cardiologists, do you think that we could see that lag behind still? Even with all this phenomenal data related to dapagliflozin?
Yeah, that's really a task for scientists, academics, clinicians to implement these findings in clinical practice. And we have to make sure that the results are disseminated in the appropriate ways and to the appropriate communities. And the communities have to accept these results and implement them in clinical practice. I agree it takes time, but I believe that with these findings, we cannot stop not implementing them because the results are very consistent. The effects are extremely large, so and the drug is safe, so we should now start implementing them. And on a personal note, that's why I'm so happy that there are now 75,000 people that have registered for the ESC, the European Society of Cardiology, where I'll be presenting these results on Sunday. So it should be an ESCN, an European Society of Cardiology and Nephrology, but I hope that many nephrologists will also attend the session on Sunday.
That's it for this episode of the Endocrine Outlook. I'm Patrick Campbell. Thank you for listening.